Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Is moksha mandatory? It depends what your goal is. Is it enough to just live a good life doing a little bit of bhakti for God and doing some good deeds? Well, it depends what your goal is. It's like saying, you know, do I have to drive a long distance, or is it okay to not drive a long distance? Well, it depends where you want to end up. I mean, if you want to go to Paris, you've got to drive a long distance or get on a flight. But if you only want to go to Haridwar, well, then you don't need to drive very far. In the same way, you need to ask yourself, what is my goal? There's no spiritual police that says, thou shalt crave moksha. What we do know is that ultimately the final highest destination experience of our soul, this jiva-atma, is what we call moksha, liberation, meaning the drop becomes one with the ocean. That instead of being separate, I become one. I merge back into the divine from which I came, from which I was never separate. You don't want to do it this lifetime? No problem. The universe is infinitely patient. You don't want to do it next lifetime? No problem. The universe is infinitely patient. You get to keep coming back and doing as much as you want each lifetime. The question, of course, becomes why? Like, why would you unnecessarily take lots of extra time to go somewhere that you know is the destination anyway, if you could actually get there faster? But that's entirely up to you. We've been created with willpower, with free will, with buddhi, with the ability to be disciplined or not so disciplined, to choose whatever we want to choose, to do a little bhakti, to do a lot of bhakti. Actually, I could tell you, I'm not 100% sure what a little bhakti means. Meaning, either you love someone or you don't. I don't know if you can love a little. You may do few things for the loved one. I mean, there are people who shower their husbands or wives or children with lots of gifts and write poems for them and write songs for them. I mean, there's, you know, we all know those people who just are these sort of effusive beings of constant giving. Every 5 minutes they're saying, oh my God, I love you so much. And then we all know those people who love just as deeply. But maybe you've never actually heard them say, I love you. They love just as deeply, but maybe they Maybe they don't show up every day with a gift or even every year with a gift. But you know it, you feel it. And it's just as good. When you really know someone deeply loves you, that's what matters. And God is the same. God is even more. I mean, as a human, we may still think, well, though, if he could bring a gift every once in a while, that would be nice. But with God, all God wants is that we should love. So you chant sometimes. You chant all the time. Okay. You do puja sometimes. You do puja a little. You do puja a lot. All right, either way. The main thing is that you love God. And if you don't love God, then all the puja and all the chanting, it's wonderful as vehicles, as paths to help you start to love God. But they're not a substitute for loving God. They're ways of catalyzing love of God in your hearts. We read scriptures, we chant God's name, we tell beautiful stories, not as substitutes for loving God, but as ways to trigger us to start to love God. And when you do, you know, Pooja Swamiji always says, when you love someone, you don't actually have to take a mala and go, Rekha, 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 Rekha. Like, you know you love Rekha. You don't need to be doing her jap mala. And so with God, the point is to really love God. You do a little puja or a lot of puja. I don't actually think God minds that much either way. I don't necessarily think either of them determines moksha. And the reason is that we've got sages and saints and mystics and enlightened beings of all different religions in the world, including some that don't do puja. And so if puja were a prerequisite for attaining enlightenment, that would be like saying that all of the prophets and seers of different religions actually hadn't attained enlightenment, which I don't believe. So moksha is the goal of your soul here in the body, ultimately returning to its oneness. What you choose to do in this lifetime to have that experience, to attain gyan, wisdom, that leads to this moksha, that's up to you. But spirituality is not something that you want to be looking at kind of what's the bare minimum I need to do to skim by. You'll just come back next lifetime and do the rest. But also realize that it's not like a full-time job with a really long to-do list, that you have to stop everything else you're doing in order to get through all of these. I've got to do this much chanting, this much prayer, this much puja, this much this. Just love God deeply, fully. And if you don't have that deep bhakti yet, engage in a path of gyan. Attain wisdom. Read scriptures. Discover the reason you're here, the truth of you. And slowly, slowly, gyan will blossom. Bhakti will blossom. And through it all, recognize that every single moment, through your actions, through your karma, you actually have the opportunity to reach moksha. How to allow every action to be one that is in service of my awakening. Every action that is in service of loving God, of serving God,
every action in service of truth, in alignment with truth. So we've got all these different ways of how to live. But don't go looking for the shortest possible way. You've been given a very powerful gift in this human birth. Don't waste it. But don't take it like a big stressful burden either. It's a joy. It's a joy like wisdom is a joy, like love is a joy, like awakened action is joy. Take it like that. And then that moksha comes even while we're living. What we call jiva mukti. Because it's not freedom from the body, it's freedom in the body. And again, doesn't happen this life, no problem. You'll get to come back to this beautiful planet again. Assuming we've done our part to take care of it.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
I'm going through some things in my personal life, and it's taking everything I have to stay grounded and centered. When people ask me if I'm okay, I lie, and I say everything is fine. I don't like to lie, but I don't want to talk about what's really going on. How can I stay honest in the midst of all that's happening? When Bhagwan Krishna speaks about the right speech, tapas of speech, dharmic speech, yogic speech, right speech, he says it must be three things: kind, true, and beneficial. Those are the criteria. Now, if you're going through something personal and somebody asks you about it, now, on the one hand, to give them the full story would be true, but it's neither kind to yourself, nor is it beneficial to either you or them, unless there's someone you want to confide in. And of course, I would always recommend having at least one person you can confide in. One person at least with whom you can be totally open and honest. But there's no reason to put your inner struggles on display for everyone who just asks, hey, how are you? In many cases, people aren't ready for it. They don't necessarily actually want all of it. We ask, how are you, almost habitually. In fact, there's a great story of an enlightened master who, somebody says to him, "How are you?" And he says, "You asked me that this morning." And the person who asked him said, well, yes, but now it's evening. And he said, "And why do you believe that I would change how I am from morning to evening? Like, why would my experience of the self change from morning till evening?" And I love that because we all have this habit of pretty much every time you see someone. Maybe we see someone 10, 15 times a day. "Hey, how are you?" Because how most of us are goes up and down constantly. So you ask me once and I say, "Oh, I'm great." An hour later you ask me and I say, "Oh my God, this happened." An hour later you ask me and again I'm great or I'm something else. The whole nature of how most of us are is so dependent on what's happening around us. That's why in meditation you'll notice I kept saying in different ways, unhook that attention from the outer world, bring it in. Well, it's not only something that's necessary for us to meditate, but it's also a beautiful skill to learn for life. It doesn't mean we don't pay attention. It doesn't mean I don't notice the table in front of me and therefore trip over it and fall. It doesn't mean that I don't have the ability to perceive what's happening. Of course we do. But it means that who I am, how I experience myself, how I am, isn't hooked into these things. It's raining, so I'm miserable. The rain stops, the sun comes out, I'm great. Then it starts raining again, I'm miserable. People are nice to me, I'm happy. They're not nice to me, I'm miserable. If we can unhook that deep awareness, attention, focus, consciousness, a bunch of different words with slightly different meanings, but for this purpose, it's all about where we are directing our ability to pay attention. Where we are directing our minds. Is it within ourself? Or is it on everything happening around us? And on that basis, we determine how we are. So, as far as the person who's asked this question, you should also recognize that the majority of people who ask how you are actually are not even really looking for the full story. A lot of times if someone says, "How are you?" and you actually do give them the full thing, "Well, you know, my God, I'm really struggling." And you can just start to see them sort of figure out how they're going to escape from the conversation. Like really all they wanted was a one word, "I'm fine, I'm good, I'm great, how are you?" It's a social nicety. It's a rare person who actually asks, "How are you?" wanting a deeply honest answer. So you shouldn't feel badly not giving people something that most of them aren't looking for anyway. That certainly isn't kind to you or beneficial to you to bare your heart to someone who may or may not be trustworthy. They may or may not be someone who really can contain, hold what you're sharing. So there's no need to give it. To say you're fine is not a lie. Because even though you are going through some things, you still are fine. Fine doesn't mean every single thing in my life is going exactly the way that if I had a magic wand, I would make it. Fine doesn't mean I have managed to completely overcome anger in my life. I've managed to completely overcome restlessness or frustration or boredom or jealousy or anguish. If that were the definition of fine, none of us would be able to say we were fine. We're still human. Fine means who I am in this moment and in every moment is okay. When I was growing up, I don't know how many of you are from America and around my age range, but when I was growing up, there was a book that I had, all of my friends had, everybody had, that was called You Are Okay. Or something like that. The theme was You Are Okay. And the book was basically, it was for young readers. And the book was I'm okay and you're okay and we're all okay. And it was all about whatever happens in the world, we are okay. And, you know, it was a book for 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds. But it was such a beautiful lesson. I'm okay. Yes, my brother stole my thing, or my sister did this, or my mom that, or my dad this, or my teacher that. But I'm okay. So saying I'm fine or I'm okay, instead of thinking of it as a lie, think of it as an assertion of truth that is actually deeper than what you're struggling with. Your okayness runs much deeper than your struggles. And so you're actually affirming to the other person and to yourself at that moment your actual okayness. So do not feel badly, but just as you're saying it, see if instead of your mind thinking this is a lie because I'm actually sad or confused or angry, troubled, frustrated, instead of the mind thinking that that's a lie and thinking that your frustration or your jealousy or your anger supersedes your okayness, allow saying to others, I'm okay, to actually be an opportunity for you to remember deeply that you are okay, that you are fine, that you're going to make it through this. We all go through things. We all go through times. And this too shall pass. There will be a time when you will look on this in the past tense. So it's a time to do the work, to go through it, to create spaciousness for it. But don't think that your okayness is a lie. It isn't. You are okay. Whatever you're going through.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
How can I live in gratitude? I'm grateful for a lot of stuff, but I'm not at the point that I can say I'm grateful for the air I breathe, or for a baby's laughter, or for a sunrise. I find myself only grateful for the big stuff, like my house and my car. So gratitude practice is to me one of the most powerful, easy ways of connecting with the divine, with ourselves, with joy, with peace, with love. And so I'm always a very big advocate for gratitude practices. The big things are easy. Having a vehicle, great. If you didn't have one, you'd have to walk. Having a house, absolutely. What a beautiful thing to be grateful for. I mean, there's so many people who don't have homes. It's easy to be grateful for our loved ones, people in our lives we love, to be grateful for our opportunities. But ultimately, the goal is to be grateful for as much as we can, because it's hard to sustain gratitude for one thing all day long. Like, yeah, I'm really happy I have a house, but that may not be able to sustain my gratitude all day long. And that's why it's really good to have a variety, to have the ability to be spontaneously grateful. Because to simply carry your gratitude for your house all day long is going to start to feel very repetitive, and it's probably going to lose some of that depth. A really beautiful way to practice gratitude is wherever you are. Every minute, can you be grateful of something right there? The air that we breathe is a huge one. And if you can't be grateful for it, just ask a friend to hold your head underwater for just long enough until you think you're about to pass out, and then let you up and see whether you don't develop some gratitude for having air to breathe. There's actually a great story about that of a seeker in a monastery, an ashram, a retreat center, and he goes to the master and he says, I want God, but I'm not really experiencing it. You know, when we meditate, my mind wanders. I know that I should be connecting to God, but every time I close my eyes, mind wanders, and it's not happening. I'm not connecting with God. And the master takes him down to the river and literally holds his head underwater. And first the guy thinks it's some kind of ritual. And then he starts to think my guru is trying to kill me because literally he's not letting his head up. And just before the guy passes out, the master pulls his head up. And the master says to him, "So what were you thinking about down there?" And the guy says, "Thinking about? I was dying to breathe." And the master says, "Did your mind wander?" The guy's like, "Mind wander? Of course not. I thought I was going to die." And the master said, "When you want God as much as you wanted a breath, your mind will stop wandering." So I love that story for so many reasons. But going back to gratitude, whatever you're having difficulty feeling grateful for, just deprive yourself of it. Not able to generate the appropriate gratitude for the meal in front of you? Fast for 24 hours. See how grateful you are when you break your fast. Not feeling so grateful for the air? Hold your breath underwater. Not feeling grateful for the water that comes out of our taps? I mean, that's a huge one. So many people in this world don't have access to water at all. I mean, here in the Himalayas, just drive up a little ways and you'll see on the road women walking for hours to get a bucket full of water from the nearby hand pump. There are cities in India where the only way people get water is a tanker comes into town. Once a day, once every 2 days, once every 3 days, and they fill up buckets. So one of the ways of generating gratitude, if it does not come easily, is just deprive yourself of that. If you're not able to generate gratitude, deep gratitude for your loved ones, just take a moment and imagine what your life would be like without them. Imagine that you got a phone call that they'd been in an accident and we're about to pass away. Don't hold that too long. It'll turn into depression and misery, but just for that moment. And then when you come out and you realize, oh my God, they're still alive and they're healthy and there was no accident. It's an automatic gratitude producer. And in terms of a sunrise or a baby's smile, to me, these are just beautiful examples of divine creation. And so when you love God, you're able to love all of these elements of the creation. It's like if you've got a child, a young child, and that young child gives you a piece of paper that they've scribbled all over. And it's illegible. I mean, it's nothing. It's a 2-year-old scribbles. But if you love that kid, you're going to take that piece of paper of scribbles and you're going to stick it up on the fridge and you're going to take a picture and post it on social media for all your friends to see. Because you love the creator of that paper of scribbles. And in the same way, if we love God and are grateful for God's presence in our life, then we start to see everything, a flower, a tree, a sunrise, a sunset, stars in the sky, the smile of a baby as we, you know, stand in line at a checkout counter and it's a baby in a stroller in front of us or behind us. Or a baby in someone else's arms. But it just immediately reconnects us to that gratitude to the divine. Whatever name you use, it doesn't matter. Whatever your spiritual path may be, it doesn't matter. But that that divine creator. So work on being grateful to the creator. And then you'll find it's a lot easier to be grateful for the creation. But gratitude is, it's an incredible practice. And it's something that I would really recommend everyone start and end their days with. It doesn't need to take more than just a couple of minutes. Just lying in bed. When you wake up in the morning, think of 5 things you're grateful for. Did your eyes open? Well, that's something to be grateful for. Think of how many people's eyes didn't open that morning. Or how many people's eyes open, but they can't see out of them. Do you have legs that can carry you to the bathroom? What a beautiful thing to be grateful for. How many don't? We've seen over the last few days here our beautiful young women with prosthetic limbs, girls who lost their limbs and now are dancing on prosthetics. Such joy, such gratitude, such vibrancy. But they had to overcome a lot. So many of us are not able to dance on the actual limbs that we've got, healthy, strong limbs, because we're not quite grateful enough for them. So just think, go basic. You don't have to think of, you know, some really esoteric thing to be grateful for. Is there a blanket over you? Does your roof not leak? Right? I mean, so much to be grateful for. Just as you lie in bed in the morning. And then again, at the end of the day, did someone smile at you? Did someone do anything for you? Hold open a door, hand you a glass of water. Do anything for you? Did you do anything for someone? Were you able? Were you able and blessed to be able to serve in some way? A big way, a small way, a noticed way, an unnoticed way, an appreciated way, an unappreciated way. Doesn't matter. But were you able to serve? So many things to be grateful for. So just expand your creativity. And you'll find them. If you can't generate gratitude for a sunrise yet, no problem. There's so many other things to generate it for. You already said you're grateful for your car. Well, are you grateful to have enough money to put gas in it? You're grateful for your house already. Well, are you grateful for the people you share that house with? Are you grateful for the food in the fridge of that house? For the water running through the pipes of that house? For your ability to open your house's door to others, to friends, to loved ones, to people in need. So just start with wherever you are and expand creatively.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
I want to be a sadhu and let go of everything that I have now. I'm also 28 and a girl and still menstruating. But I want to join an ashram. I've really lost interest in the material world, and I'm tired of chasing things that are not permanent. It's not giving me peace. Signed, a Shiva devotee. So, Your intention is beautiful. That longing, that urge to anchor yourself in something that is lasting, that is real. You know, when I first came to India at 25 and realized this is where I belonged, that was 26 years ago now. But in the first several years, when I would talk to people, I would always say that I felt like I had been born in America by accident. That somehow it was some kind of accident, and I really should have been born in India. And, you know, that, or maybe I had done something wrong in a past birth, and that's why God sort of sent me off to be confused for the first few decades of my life in this one. And I had all of these ideas that somehow having been born in India would have been better. But I realized as the years went by actually how incredibly perfect it was that I had been born in America, because if I had grown up as a young, sheltered girl in India. I mean, I come from a beautiful family, an amazing family of a lot of privilege, a lot of opportunity, a lot of caring and sheltering in many ways. And if that had been an Indian family rather than an American family, I would, by the age of 25, I would have seen very little. I would have experienced very little. Now things are changing, but remember, I've been here more than a quarter of a century. I started growing up 51 years ago. So I would have been raised in a very different way. I would have been sheltered in a very different way. And even if I had had these very powerful experiences here, there might have been a part of me that always wondered, well, I wonder what that's like, or I wonder what that's like, or what if I hadn't taken vows of monasticism, and what if I had, you know, engaged in sensual pleasures and relationship and this and that. And there probably would have been in my mind always some kind of question of, I wonder what that's like, I wonder what that's about, maybe I made a wrong decision. And I realized how incredibly perfect it was that I actually had grown up in America and in LA, where by the age of 25, I had seen so much. I had done so much. I had experienced so much that when I decided to take vows of renunciation, I knew that I never was going to wonder, God, I wonder what that's like or this is like, because I had actually experienced all of those things. And when we experience what we call the world of samsara, that never-ending cycle of, you know, illusion and yearning and desiring and aversion and grabbing, and when we live in that, we find ourselves chasing after what we think is going to bring happiness. But of course, it never does. And when you've actually experienced that, and you've experienced it from a place of having things, from succeeding, very quickly, if you're plugged in, if you're tuned in internally, you realize very quickly, this is not actually what life really is about. This actually is not giving me that joy, that peace, that meaning, that sense of fulfillment that I'm looking for. And so as the beautiful questioner, who's only 28, but growing up in a new India, or maybe she's not in India, maybe she's a Shiva devotee somewhere else, but she's, as we say, seen it, done it, been there. And when we have, it's very beautiful to realize, okay, I don't want to waste any more time. I don't want to waste any more energy running after things that are not what's going to give me the real peace, the real meaning, the real joy. So to a Shiva devotee, it's beautiful that you think like that. Ashrams are wonderful places. They are, of course, challenges as well. You know, sometimes people say, well, I'm tired of the challenges of the world. I want to come join an ashram. And I always say, well, you're just going to exchange one set of challenges for an entirely different set of challenges. An ashram is not a place that's devoid of challenges, because challenges are in our mind. It's not the outer world that actually creates challenges. And wherever you bring yourself, there you are. So as long as you've got tendencies toward anger, tendencies toward jealousy, tendencies toward grabbing or aversion or ego or judgment or competition or lust or greed or all of the different, I don't like the word vices. It sort of implies that we, you know, deserve to be locked up somewhere. They're tendencies of the mind. And there are tendencies that take us in a direction that we don't want to go in. So if you've got those tendencies of mind wherever you are, whether it's in a big city, whether it's lying on a Caribbean beach, or whether it's in an ashram, if your mind is there, you're going to still struggle with it. There's always going to be opportunities to feel angry, to want to grab, to want to push away, to compete, to judge, to have the ego play its games. So the ashram is a different kind of crucible in which you get burned, literally, in a whole different way. But in that burning, you get purified. It's like when a potter makes ceramics on a wheel and then they stick it in the kiln. And in that kiln, it gets fired and finished. So by all means, you are welcome in ashrams. And I would hope that most ashrams would welcome women, even young women. There's certainly no rule that says thou shalt not join an ashram until, you know, you've gone through menopause. At this time of your life, though, there are going to be challenges. I mean, there's challenges at any time. But there's going to be challenges with family, we know that. There's going to be challenges with society, you know that. But if you're really sure, I would suggest going to an ashram, spending 2 weeks, a month, 6 weeks, 2 months, before you really decide that this is what you want to do. Because an ashram is not a place to run away to. It's a place to run toward. You don't want to join an ashram because you're fed up with the world. There's two ways to go anywhere. Either because you're pushing away the alternative and therefore you end up over here. So I'm pushing against the East, therefore I end up in the West. I keep pushing and pushing and pushing. You know, if you push away Rishikesh in a southerly direction, you're going to end up in Delhi. Not because you necessarily were thinking for Delhi, you were just pushing away Rishikesh. But another way to go is instead of pushing away, you turn around and you move consciously, actively forward. And the way to join an ashram is consciously, actively forward. Not, I'm pushing away being fed up with the world, or I'm pushing away responsibilities and troubles. Because you'll just create more troubles for yourself, for others. You should only join an ashram if you are really actively wanting to move toward a life that's dedicated to personal practice, a life that's dedicated to truth, to awareness, to working through your mental tendencies so that you can actually be a clearer, purer, not in the sense of the soul, but in the sense of the vehicle, instrument in the hands of the divine. And if that's what's pulling you, then by all means, come. And don't let the fact that you're a girl or menstruating or 28 stop you. You know, I find myself going to a lot of events that I wouldn't ordinarily necessarily go to. Your type of events where there's lots and lots and lots of religious leaders on a stage with one theme and everybody gets to speak for, you know, 2 minutes or 3 minutes. And I find myself going to those that I wouldn't necessarily ordinarily go, but I go because I know I'm going to be the only woman on the stage. And that if I don't go, there won't be a woman on the stage. And I go so that if a young woman like this, or any woman or any girl, is watching this event in person or online, and she thinks that spirituality isn't for her because she's a girl, that she would see me and say, oh, I guess it can be for me too. I guess there is a place for me too. So do not feel that as a woman, as a fertile woman, that you are disqualified from spiritual practice or from grace. Yeah, there's certain maryadas that we follow during that time of the month, but they're just their little things that we do and that we don't. Same way that in so many other situations in life, there's things we do and things we don't. But they're little and they're easily adapted to. As a 25-year-old coming in from America, it was easy for me to adapt, so it would be easy for anyone to. And if this is what you want, then come.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.
Thank you.